You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
It's the first time that Apple have actually decided to tell people about something that they're developing.
High-speed broadband. Let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
The three main spamming countries are the United States, China, and South Korea.
And I've got some residual powers.
Sounds like something out of Harry Potter.
Senator Coonan, the voice of reason.
There's a couple of systems on a gantry that's actually based on a military missile tracking system.
You put the date on ePray, and you get a whole service just on it.
How does it go?
IE7, you were having trouble installing it because you had a genuine copy of Windows that wouldn't validate properly. What did you have to do to get past that?
Built a new machine.
But how hard can it be?
No, it's not hard at all.
At the end of the day, the photography is all about the person's eye and what they see.
If you find something that's inappropriate about your child, you need to do something about it because it will not go away.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the second last live Tech Talk Radio for this year. I'm your host, Andrew McComb. The silly season is nearly upon us yet again, and as another year draws to a close, it's time to get festive again. Hopefully by now, your better half has asked you that perplexing question, what do you want for Christmas? Followed by something like, why are you so difficult to buy something for? Sound familiar? Well, there's plenty of new technology and gadgets designed to fill the stocking. In the realm of home entertainment, you can ask for anything from new music and movies through to a brand new Sony Bravia and home entertainment system. That'll keep the family entertained for hours, not to mention give you an excuse to put your feet up and watch the cricket. Why not ask for some personal space? Hard drive storage, that is. Then you'll be able to do those backups of family photos that you know you should do before you lose anything on that hard drive. In your computer, you know, the one that's starting to make strange noises. Don't forget to ask for those things you want, but just can't justify buying for yourself. Like the Series 4 Doctor Who box set, or the complete library of Get Smart, which just happened to be on display at my local variety store. On the other hand, if you're heading away for a break, why not get that mobile GPS system you've always wanted? Or better still, grab yourself a wireless IP-based security camera, so you can at least take photos of those people helping themselves to your toys. Also today, ISP iiNet was the focus of Australian Federal Police's attention this week. A collection of movie houses alleged that iiNet is harbouring criminals. This seems very coincidental that it's also the same time that the federal government's internet filter is being implemented at the ISP. I also caught up with Vanessa Hutley, Microsoft's local director of intellectual property. Did you know that around 30% of the world's PCs have non-genuine Microsoft software installed? Did you know that as a consumer, the most likely place to be ripped off when buying software is on eBay? Apologies to the genuine sellers, I bet you didn't. We'll also tell you which countries are the biggest offenders when it comes to piracy. And would it surprise you, they're very close to home.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
Adam Turner looks at iiNet's dilemmas. Dr. Ron ventures into the world of HDMI and 5.1. The first test for interplanetary internet gets underway. Conroy calls Telstra's NBN bluff. And global broadband users reach 400 million. Right now, let's join Dr. Ron and find out what's been happening in the tech world for this week.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, outrage as Telstra backs executive pay packets at AGM. Controversy surrounds legal action by movie houses against iiNet. Foxtel expands online programming to 14 days. And Google now lets you roll your own search results. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Telstra's annual general meeting in Melbourne last week was met with outrage by shareholders as its board of directors publicly supported the million-dollar remuneration packages offered to Telstra directors. And the incumbent telco made it quite clear that it won't be bidding for a national broadband network if it's forced to run the network at arm's length from the services side of its business. Despite the global economic downturn and its share prices plummeting to below $4, a long way below the $7.40 paid by many shareholders as part of T2, Telstra defended CEO Sol Trujillo's $13.4 million annual pay packet, saying the company had performed on all financial measures and delivered strong shareholder value. This opinion seemed to be at odds with many shareholders who attended the AGM.
Remuneration of the directors was absolutely obscene, along with a lot of other companies, but their performance really doesn't justify that sort of money.
But despite shareholder opinion, the chairman of Telstra Board's Remuneration Committee, Charles Mackheck, told the AGM Mr. Trujillo's pay packet last financial year came on the back of a strong performance by the company. Telstra also indicated at the AGM that it would not be applying to build a national broadband network if the government separated Telstra's internal business units.
Unless we can have clarity from the relevant federal government minister that we will not be subjected to further separation, we are not in a position to lodge an RFP bid, nor to build the NBN.
Telstra chairman, Mr. Donald McGauchie, explained that the economics of building a national broadband network weren't viable if government regulation of the network was too oppressive.
Our reasons are quite straightforward. Separation or splitting up of Telstra means, very simply, there would be no business case for Telstra to build an NBN. The economics of it just aren't there.
Mr. McGauchie went on to attack Communications Minister Mr. Stephen Conroy, as well as the ACCC, describing recent decisions as being anti-competitive. Telstra shares ended up 1 cent on Friday at $3.98. The Australian film and television industry has launched civil action against one of Australia's largest internet service providers, iiNet, for allegedly allowing its users to download pirated movies and television programs. The syndicate are comprised of movie houses and networks such as Village Roadshow, Universal Pictures, 20th Century Fox and the Seven Network filed charges in the federal court on Thursday last week. Mr. Mark White, iiNet's chief operating officer, said the company did not support piracy in any form, but it could not disconnect customers just because the movie industry claimed they engaged in illegal downloading. A spokeswoman for the Australian Federation Against Copyright Theft said they had identified thousands of copyright infringements on the part of iiNet's customers and that iiNet had been provided with 18 separate notices of those infringements, but that nothing had been done to remedy the problem. The spokeswoman said that other ISPs may also be targeted, but that individual downloaders at this stage were not being investigated. The legal action comes just weeks after iiNet's managing director, Mr. Michael Malone, volunteered to participate in the government's new internet filtering trials. The so-called net filter has been widely criticised by industry experts, including iiNet, as being ineffectual and technically unworkable. In recent times, iiNet has also spoken out against the federal government's efforts to build a national broadband network. Foxtel has expanded its online programming guide to 14 days, which means subscribers can now set programs to record 2 weeks in advance. Foxtel Executive of Sales and Product, Mr. Patrick Delaney, told Channel News last week that Foxtel's 14-day online guide lets subscribers search through 30,000 hours of programming and allows customers to search for shows across 14 days. Subscribers can now register online and, using a free account connected to their Foxtel subscription, simply click, drag and drop programs to record them. A network message is then sent out to the subscriber's IQ or IQ2 set-top box to record. But Foxtel's television-based electronic program guide will continue to show programming up to just 7 days in advance. And internet search juggernaut Google has announced that users will now be allowed to reshuffle search results so their favourite websites get high ranking and less popular results get discarded the next time the user enters the same request. The new system, announced on Thursday last week, is the first time that Google has allowed its users to alter the order of search results. A spokeswoman for Google said that while the revisions wouldn't change Google's closely guarded algorithms for ranking websites, the company wasn't ruling out using the personalised data to change its own internet searching algorithms. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Three of the world's biggest LCD manufacturers have admitted taking part in huge price-fixing conspiracy to drive up the price of their products.
It's the thin end of the wedge, and as you've already said, it's expanding. We're going to cover more sites. We're going to block more material.
Protect your internet at all costs, I guess.
What exactly is this Hyper-V?
Take a real
server with a real bit of hardware, and you build it to spec to be quite powerful, to have a lot of memory.
Hyper-V.
That's it, hyperventilated,
isn't it? I've never seen anything so green in my entire life as the green LED traffic lights.
Who in the right mind to buy prescription drugs off the internet?
People do.
We're not going to stop you from going here, but we really recommend that you don't.
Bigger doesn't always mean better. It depends on both the size of your lounge room and the size of your budget.
A faint taste of urine, and it's just as refreshing as any other kind of water. He says he's got some in his fridge and it tastes fine.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Tech Talk Radio for yet another week. Second last one, to be precise. I'm Andrew McComb, sitting across in front of me this evening, Dr. Ron Graham Callaghan. How are you, boys?
This is very exciting. The second last one, the penultimate Tech Talk for 2008.
Yet another year of Tech Talk Radio.
Penultimate. That's a very good term.
Do you like that one?
Penultimate. Yes, I do.
I've been saving that all day. No, I haven't.
Have you?
No.
Driving around the city.
You've got one of those word of the day calendars, have you, Dr. Ron?
I need one. I'd like to have a word of the day calendar.
There's a service that I log into from time to time that comes up with silly things like that. One of them the other day, which I saw and laughed, and says, if at first you don't succeed, don't take up skydiving.
No, that's something that you want to succeed at the first time, and every time, I would have thought.
Yes, exactly right. Well, what a week it's been this week.
It's where do we start? What do we do?
I don't know.
From which angle do we attack?
Well, let's start from the United States and welcome Lydia Davis as I push up her fader over there. Hi, Lyd, come in. Hello.
Hello. How are you?
Ah, there she is. Yeah, we're all really good over here. Gee, another fader tonight. I've got lots of things to look at here on my desk. How's things? What's happening?
Lots and lots and lots.
Yeah.
Dig and Gmail and all sorts of really interesting stuff.
Oh, good. Well, we might talk about a few things, hey?
Yeah, I suppose you'll know about all that.
Well, you'll have to surprise us.
Never assume anything. Hi, Lyd, how you doing?
Not so bad. How are you, Mr. Dr. Ron?
I'm not a surgeon yet. Surgeons get Mr. after their doctor. I'm just going to settle for doctor for the time being.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Yes, we're going to be talking about iiNet tonight. They've been visited by the feds, and there's all sorts of issues happening there with respect to copyright and movie houses. Adam Turner's got a piece on that. We're going to be speaking to Colin Jacobs, who's a spokesperson from the Electronic Frontiers of Australia, and he'll be telling us all about the web filtering that's potentially starting to kick in now, which is why we're seeing all sorts of strange things coming up. And we're going to speak to Vanessa Hartley from Microsoft about piracy and those clone CDs and DVDs that are floating around in the marketplace at the moment.
We're not going to be able to fit all this in one show.
Not to mention all the rest of the stuff that's down the back here. We had a Telstra AGM, which is plenty of fuel for fire for us this evening.
Controversy.
Yeah, so we got that to talk about. And Conroy's going to, apparently, Mr. Conroy, he's the minister, the Australian Minister for Communications. Or is he a senator? No, he's still a minister, isn't he?
He's a minister, but he is an honourable. No, you've confused me now.
Yeah, no, I was.
He's the Minister for Digital Broadband and the Internet. And
the BCDEF.
FG or something.
Yeah.
It's Conroy.
That's right. Yeah, thanks. You're with us now, Graham.
Yes, sorry. Yes.
Hi, Graham.
So that'll be also interesting on tonight's show. Global broadband users, also big time there as well. There's domain news, there's internet news, Yahoo, Yang. Yang's gone from Yahoo.
Yes, he has. Yeah, Yang's gone. He was the CEO, the big fella.
Yeah, it's a bit like Seoul, really, but maybe not. That's a very... I don't even know the man. I can't say that, can I? Anyway, where to start? How was your week, Dr. Ron? What'd you do? Anything exciting? You've ventured into the foray of new gadgets, I hear.
Yes, I have. Yeah. New toy.
New toys?
Early Christmas present.
Should we talk about that? By the way, before we start that, have you got any correspondence that needs entering into?
I've always got correspondence that we need to enter into.
All right.
From Andrew via email. Hi, Andrew and TTR team. Following on from the web filter discussion from last week's show, what do you think about this? I'm not too into conspiracy theories, but one has to wonder at the coincidence. Michael Malone, CEO of iiNet, says, even aside from the technical and legal problems associated with ISP-level filtering, quote, there is also the whole ethical position of how appropriate it is for the Australian government to start acting like the Chinese government. Then, Andrew says a few days later, suddenly, out of all of Australia's ISPs, Headlines: II sued for allowing piracy. Andrew's questioning if this is a conspiracy theory or not.
We absolutely
have to talk about this.
Yes, we do.
We talk about that a bit later.
Absolutely.
Will I plough on with the correspondence?
Yeah, but keep ploughing on. I think that's a good question.
It's from Simon via email. Hi, Dr. On. Hi, Simon. Looks like you have a spammer on the loose on the TikTok radio forums. There's already been one reply to it, so might be I need to jump on it before it gets out of hand. Thanks, Simon. We did. And that forum user has been executed with extreme prejudice. If you notice any bizarre happenings like that, and sometimes it takes us a day to catch up because of the different time zones and work zones and mental zones, send us a quick email, feedback@techtalkradio.com.au, and we can take care of such matters.
Fantastic. All right. Dr. Graham.
Yes.
How'd you go?
With?
The week. Was it successful for you?
With. Yes. Yes, been doing exciting things as per usual.
Thanks for all your hard work last week, Graham, as well, by the way. I deigned myself to come in today, so
well done.
Enjoyed listening to the program as well.
Oh, no, thanks for covering for me the week before when I was absent. So
oh, that's right. I haven't seen you for ages. It's been 3 weeks since we've...
Yeah.
Never mind. Crikey. Never mind.
All right, we'll have a beer after the show,
we'll
shall we,
to.
Boys?
Have to do something.
Absolutely.
Definitely. IINet.
All right.
IINet.
Do you want to start about that, or should we just... yeah, I guess we can.
We can't ignore it and hope it's going to go away, because it won't go away.
Okay, well, let's start, shall we? IINet, probably, if you look at Whirlpool, they're the number two provider of choice of Whirlpool people. That's a forum here in Australia which likes to talk about internet and related issues in the community.
Yeah.
They are currently under investigation by the Australian Federal Police in relation to copyright breaches, which is allowing their users access to BitTorrents, things like peer-to-peer file sharing, to download movies. Now, this action's been brought against them by Channel 7 and 7 movie houses.
Some big movie houses.
Yeah. Yeah. So what's going on here is the question. Are we going to start seeing prosecutions of... the general public, because they're downloading stuff, or is poor old IINet going to be the scapegoat, I guess, for a better term?
Graham and I were talking about this during the week, and our first contention was that an internet service provider cannot be held responsible or liable for traffic that's passing over its networks.
Perhaps we should modify that to should not.
Should not.
Yes.
If the Copyright Act is written in such an insanely stupid way that they can be, then perhaps it shouldn't be.
Well, this is information that came to light since you and I had a bit of an off-air rant, Graham, yeah, about this. What they're saying is that IINet has been given a number of notices to say that we have identified users, customers of IINet, that are infringing copyright. And the contention is that IINet have done nothing to ban or to warn these users.
Well, they've allegedly given the details to the appropriate authority to deal with.
We need a liberal sprinkling of the word allegedly in this discussion, I think, at the moment.
Allegedly, everything is allegedly. Okay.
Until a court says otherwise.
Now, what's happened, apparently, allegedly, is that representatives of the movie houses and Channel 7, I suppose, they're part of the guys.
Channel 7, we've got Village Roadshow, 20th Century Fox, Universal Pictures, and the list goes on.
Now, apparently the IP addresses on BitTorrent are presented in these things when people are looking for movie torrents and stuff like that. When people start downloading, you can see the IP address. Now, those in the know in the industry who are sort of ramping up the charge against IINet have been collecting IP addresses which are in IINet's range.
Right.
And anyway, you read between the lines there, it stemmed into an action against the IINet ISP. And that's what we're starting to see now. Now, coincidentally, the filtering system is also being trialled at the moment. I don't know whether IINet have turned it on yet. There's probably someone on our forum who may be able to tell us whether it is or it isn't on at this point in time. What do you reckon? Conspiracy theories? The movie houses are just jumping in now as this is all happening?
This is what our listener Andrew was suggesting in his feedback to our feedback address. So maybe there is a bit of a conspiracy going on here. Although you wonder why, because IINet have volunteered to actually trial the net filter system.
Absolutely.
Although the managing director of IINet, Mr. Michael Malone, has been very vocal in his comments about the potential, the effectiveness, the usefulness of the net filter, in that he's been saying it's a complete and utter waste of time, it's stupid, it's ridiculous, we're going to demonstrate how stupid and ridiculous it is by trialling it. So We don't know. Are the two things related or are the two things mutually exclusive?
Don't know. Coincidence at this point in time. Also, Malone said that his company would vigorously defend the federal court action lodged by these heavyweights. So I think it's going to be on for young and old. And AFACT, which is the Australian Federation Against Copyright Theft, representing these companies, sent the letter to iiNet containing the IP addresses of thousands of the ISP's customers who AFACT claimed were using iiNet's network to infringe the copyright. That is BitTorrent sharing, file sharing, downloading things that they shouldn't.
When I said a few moments ago that they've been served with a number of warnings, in the news at the start of the program, I think I said that they've been provided with 18 separate notices of identified infringements, and AFACT are alleging that nothing has been done on the part of iiNet to remedy that problem.
Mm. Okay. Well, we'll just have to wait and see what transpires. It's going to be a very interesting week, but I think the court system moves slowly, and especially around Christmas time. Who knows what might and when that might turn into being something. We'll talk a little bit more about that after the break when Adam has his chat and no doubt rant about it. So stay tuned for all that and more on Tech Talk Radio. Another interesting incident, which the internet is the carrier, whether it be good, bad, indifferent or otherwise. It was reported on Saturday that a 19-year-old Florida man posted a suicide note online and invited members of a bodybuilding forum to watch him as he overdosed on pills in front of a live webcam.
This is rather macabre, isn't it?
It is. It is.
Yeah.
Lead, have you heard about this?
You
heard about this, obviously.
I have. It's really sad. I should give you the link, actually. Basically, you know, some people have claimed that, you know, he's been threatening suicide for a long time. And what happened was he was on the web doing a live stream. He's in Florida, I believe.
He was
in Florida. And he started chatting and saying, my life's miserable. And I should find the link.
And no one believed him. They thought he was just...
No one believed him. And he took this, you know, great amount of pills, laid down, and after a while...
He didn't move.
Well, yeah, basically. And the people in the chat room started joking around saying, you know, he's just mucking about being silly, blah, blah, blah. And a guy in India, it turns out, decided that, no, he's not mucking about. So he contacted someone here in Florida trying to get them to call the police, which they wouldn't do, apparently. In the end, he ended up calling the police, and after all this drama, finally got them there. And there's, you know, screenshots of them, you know, the police coming in and actually standing over this guy and the chat room going, oh, this is the police, and not quite believing it, and then realising he had actually committed suicide.
That's horrific. So he's actually contacted the police from the other side of the world in order to actually get them to attend and do something.
Yeah, and he was quite furious about it because, I mean, you know, having to muck about, but he was the only one that was really taking it seriously. And
yeah, well, a lot of industry pundits. A lot of industry pundits have actually been talking up the dilemmas of the internet and saying, well, you know, like everything, let's ban the carrier because, you know, that's what it's all about. Peter Koronis is the chief executive of the Internet Industry Association here in Australia. This is what he had to say.
With the volume of content that is traversing the internet, the sheer magnitude of the medium itself, and the fact that it isn't subject to any one legal regime, we really need to look beyond regulatory solutions and look towards empowerment and education and hopefully the identification of people who are at risk before we turn to the medium and say that it's actually the internet that's at fault. There must be 100,000 instances of situations where people have been deterred from harming themselves because they've found support on the internet.
Indeed. And so there you go. Don't blame the messenger. It's just what people do. It's a carrier. It's very unfortunate what happened. Very sympathetic towards
the
cause.
Sad.
But unfortunately, So have you got any more news on it, Lyd, or did it make mainstream over there or what?
Yeah, it did. Also, I don't know whether you know, but there was a chap here who was sacked by his employers Friday week ago, went back in there to have a chat with a gun, shot three people dead.
Really?
This is in Mountain View. This also made mainstream media. Shot three people dead, including the woman that had sacked him, the CEO, I believe, and one other person. Someone who has a little child at home, this guy had basically been fired and decided it wasn't acceptable and decided to ruined four, the lives of four families. It's just really quite morbid on the internet lately.
Oh, well, I guess you take the good with the bad in a lot of respects, but, as everyone says, you can't blame the internet. It's all to do with how people are perceived online, whether they're happy, sad, or indifferent. So, anyway. Mm. All right, let's move on to other interesting, gossipy, newsy things. Dr. Ron, 5.1 HDMI, what are you doing? Have you finally moved into the realms of high-definition home entertainment at last?
This is extremely exciting. An early Christmas present for myself and the... hugs and kisses, as I mentioned at the start of the show.
It's isn't it?
It's a Samsung HT-TX500T. That's a bit of a mouthful, but if you're Googling it frantically, I'll say it again. Samsung HT-TX500T. It's a new home theatre system.
Any good?
Yeah, I'm pretty impressed. I am. It's very good. I got it with some credit card reward points, so I paid significantly less than the RRP, so it's very good for the price I paid.
Best way to get things like that, isn't it?
It is indeed. If you're interested in a good independent review, there's a good one on CNET. So if you go to www.cnet.com.au, search there for Samsung Home Theatre. It is a 5.1 surround sound system, as you said, Andrew. I'm now, for the very first time in my life, running video through HDMI. I was using component video,
woohoo!
And it comes supplied with an HDMI cable, so very impressed with that.
Do you notice the difference just on DVDs and things like that?
I'm glad you asked, Graeme. You do notice a difference. It is a little bit better, but I mentioned to Andrew, if I'm being very critical, I can still see some little video artifacts, especially...
You'll always see those in domestic
stuff. Well, on DVDs, you've got to remember that it's a standard definition format, so...
I'm not using Blu-ray, I'm using
DVD.
You'll
see it even more on Blu-ray.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because it's high-res compression.
Where I notice it is where you have very gradual changes of colour, like really low contrast skies.
Yep. And you see bands of colour through it.
Yes, that's exactly what you notice, Graeme.
Yep.
I thought, that's a little bit disappointing, but then I put it into perspective. It is DVD, as you say. It's not Blu-ray. Look, the package comes with like a vertically mounted sort of control unit, and that contains the DVD player, all the smarts. It has a big, buffy proprietary cable that it runs to a subwoofer, and then all the audio cables connect from the subwoofer to all the five speakers. It's got a USB port on the side, so you can plug in your memory stick.
Excellent.
You can view JPEGs, you can listen to MP3s, so that's good. A little bit disappointed because it's only got two auxiliary inputs. Would have liked a few more.
HDMI inputs or just AUGs general?
Just AUGs for analog.
You don't need analog anymore.
If I'm running in a PlayStation or if I'm running in my PC, they'd start to fill up fairly fast. That's what I'm finding.
But buy yourself a switch box. If it's only analog, doesn't matter.
The other thing that's disappointing is it doesn't have a network port. It doesn't have 100 base T.
You
Wi-Fi.
Bought too soon, didn't you? You goose.
That's
you should have waited a week.
You're right. I should have waited
a week. Yeah, but if you'd got one that had that, it would be missing some other vital feature.
You're right, Graham. I'd be criticising it for not having Bluetooth. Or I'd be criticising it for not having something.
No, that's the thing. You've got to bite the bullet and get into technology regardless, don't you?
That's right. So, look, Samsung 10 out of 10 for the packaging and presentation. That was excellent. I took lots of photos as I was pulling it apart and assembling it. I'll put them up on my blog fairly soon.
It does look very stylish and swisho on the photos on the web.
It is. It's very nice.
Come around and have a look.
You will? Yeah, I've got to climb under the house now and run all the cables properly. I've got cables draped all over the lounge room.
What's wrong with that?
Oh, well, that's just right. The RRP in Australia is $1,099.
So, a lot less if you've got frequent flyer points.
And probably a lot less if you go into your local retailer.
Absolutely.
The bright yellow one with some cash in hand.
With the dollar heading south. Hey, by the way, did you know that Mr. Kevin Rudd, the Australian Prime Minister, has been in office for 12 months today?
Yeah.
On some radio stations.
Kevin 747.
That's him.
Yeah.
They're talking up his achievements. Well, let me tell you, the NBN, that's got to be a highlight of not completing the task at hand, doesn't it?
A non-compliance achievement.
In one hand, they want to speed it up, and in the other hand, they want to slow it down. Can't work that out. Why don't you just leave it alone and see what happens? Hey, and other really good news. How many of you here are Python fans?
Yep. Almost all of us.
Absolutely. There's a new Python channel on YouTube, did you know?
No.
Absolutely.
Lid, you're a Python fan, are you?
For 3 years, YouTubers have been ripping us off, taking tens of thousands of our videos and putting them up on YouTube. But being the extraordinarily nice chaps we are, we figured out a better way to get our own back.
Like how?
It's time for us to take matters into our own hands.
What is this all about?
By launching our very own Monty Python channel on YouTube.
Really?
Wow.
Fabulous. Great idea.
Fantastic.
No more of those crap quality videos you've been posting. We're giving you the real thing. High quality videos delivered straight from our Monty Python vault.
We wanted it to go out as we made it.
To kind of have everything, a comprehensive collection that's kind of sorted and catalogued and labelled.
What's more, we're taking your most viewed clips and uploading brand new high-quality versions.
My son showed me how to edit on the computer, so it's great.
It was quite an exhausting process.
And what's even more, we're letting you see absolutely everything for free.
What? Are you insane?
No. That's a lot of television, it's a lot of money.
But we want something in return.
Let's stick at it. Maybe there is money to be made.
We want you to click on the links and buy our movies and TV shows.
Now I get it.
Only this will soften our pain and disgust at being ripped off all these years.
What a relief. Oh, God.
Fine by me.
Have the shows.
The Monty Python channel on YouTube.
Wait for it. There you go. There's the traditional Monty Python sound at the very end.
Now, my question is...
I've had a watch. There's some great stuff there.
It is available in Australia.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
You don't get this silly, oh, this content is only available to...
Nah. Go and have a look. AU.
I really hate when that happens. Yeah, bloody Americans.
Have a look. Fell on deaf ears. So there you go.
Yep.
All right.
Weird. What's wrong with Monty Python? You're not a fan.
Me?
Yes, you in California.
Sorry. No, not the other lead, you lead.
No. I've never really gotten into Monty Python or, I don't know, any of those English humour, sort of lame humour type of
lame
shows. I'm really
lame.
Sorry.
Lame?
What's wrong with the killer bunny rabbit?
Just could not ever get into it.
Oh, well. There you go.
It's one of those things, you either love it or...
You're living
you
in the right country now for Monty Python. Yeah, exactly. All right. The other interesting news, Dr. Ron, you've got a Black Monday fear for malware spike. What's this all about?
Security researchers have deemed it November 24, which is...
That's today.
...on or about the day that we're recording this program.
We are, yes.
Black Monday.
Really?
Following predictions, it will herald this year's peak in the spread of information-stealing malware. PC Tools, which analysed information taken from 500,000 users of its antivirus products, said its internal monitoring systems registered a dramatic spike in viruses around November 19 last year, 3 days before the American Thanksgiving holiday, and about the time when many people were shopping online for Christmas presents. Lid, can you talk a little bit about Thanksgiving? What's that all about?
That's where you have turkeys, isn't it? Thanksgiving?
Big holiday occasion in the United States.
Sorry, I'm chatting in the chat room, so what did you say?
Oh, don't mind us. We've just got a radio show to put to air. You just keep chatting and tapping away and doing your own thing. That's all right.
Thanksgiving.
Tell us about Thanksgiving.
Well, go and ask Lid on the chat. chat.techtalkradio.com.au is where she's chatting at the moment. Sorry.
Yeah, we've started celebrating only because the children are taught all about Thanksgiving at school, and as a result, want to celebrate it at home. We did the turkey thing the first year, bought the biggest turkey we could find, followed the recipe instructions to the letter, and had a bite and threw it out.
Are you doing lots of shopping online at the moment? Are you ramping up your Christmas shopping time that you spend on the internet? People are concerned that because there's a spike at the moment in online purchasing and online financial activity that's going to threaten information security.
Is that what it's about?
Yeah, it's what it's all about. There is expected to be a bigger than usual bounty of sensitive credit card and bank account information available to cyber thieves this year. There you go. As many people turn to the internet to find lower prices on presents and to help them beat the credit crunch.
Well, there you go. That's pretty impressive, isn't it?
Yeah, so... The only advice we can give is what we give every show, and we have done so every week for the last umpteen dozen years, and that
update
is...
Update everything.
Make sure your Windows updates, if you're running a Windows operating system, are current. Make sure you have anti-spyware software installed.
If you haven't, you can get the free Microsoft one. It's called Windows Defender. All you got to do is go to the Microsoft site and type Defender in anywhere. You'll get that.
Do you reckon that's any good? Came preloaded on your laptop.
It's better than nothing. It's a lot better than nothing.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool.
Well, it works.
Now, while you're talking about security and things, an exploit in Gmail has been revealed again.
Oh, yeah? Is this if you log on or is this if you pop in and collect your mail?
if you log on.
Okay.
Basically, about a year ago, this came up where what basically happens is if you visit a malicious – it begins when you visit a malicious site while you're logged into Gmail. And it doesn't matter whether it's, you know, the links initiated through your account or whether you go to another tab and just, you know, type in the URL, they can grab information about your account and use that to effectively hijack your domain if you have one. And what's happened was about a year ago, a guy suggested that Gmail may have a security flaw, and then it's called a cross-site request forgery exploit. Basically, he a week later updated the post to say, hey, Google have fixed the flaw. 1 month later, someone else was hacked doing the same thing and received an email saying, if you give me $650, I'll give you your domain back.
Nice.
This all happened as a result of the filter settings in Gmail accounts where if you're logged on, basically people can come, you know, the bad guys can come in, change the settings, redirect all your email to whatever account they want, grab your information, and they've done it. And it's just happened again, I think, last week.
So have they found another way around the exploit? Is that what they've done?
Well, we don't know whether they found another way around the exploit or whether it's the same exploit and it just hasn't been
opened up again or something,
Google.
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, but Google's always been really tricky to get a response from when it comes to things like this. But you'd expect security or email security in particular would be very, you know, much at the top of their list. One of the things that they do recommend, or Google does recommend, is that you regularly check your filters. And if you are doing any work while you're logged in, to use a different browser, basically.
Oh, really? Online.
Yeah, yeah, this... or even another instance of a browser, I think. Does another instance of a browser fix it? No, it might. But certainly not another tab.
Generally, yeah, this advice has been around for a while, that when you're in a secure site, you're logged in with some credentials, and this applies to banking sites as well. It's probably not a good idea to be surfing other things at the same time as you're logged into your secure site.
Because that's a good tip.
There can be some
cross-pollination
going on.
But the problem is people don't
realise it. No, that's right. It's one of the tips that's a little bit obscure and gets lost in the advice sometimes, so... and a lot of people, as you suggest, Lyd, you can solve it by having a different browser. So if you're doing your online banking in Internet Explorer, you might open up Firefox to do your other browsing. Or if you're on your Gmail in Chrome, then you might open up Firefox to look at something else. So
All right. So if you're surfing Google, why don't you pop in and pick your mail up? A lot safer. That's what I do.
IMAP. I use IMAP which is brilliant for
excellent.
Because you can see all your folders and things.
All right. Before we go to the break, let's talk a little bit about Telstra's AGM. They had one during the week. A lot of disgruntled shareholders.
Let's.
Dr. Ron, off you go.
Off I go.
Yeah. You got a list a mile long, haven't you?
Oh, yeah. I had a bit of a rant about this in the news, I think, at the top of the show.
It's all about Sol's payout and stuff like that, and the rant about separation, about if they split the telco up, then they're going to take their bat and ball and go home.
Well, they are. They are. They're saying that they're not going to submit a response to the request for proposal that's been put forward by the government for the construction of the NBN for a next generation new broadband network, if the government are going to split up their business units internally and not allow them to merge and mix and match their services arms with their infrastructure and maintenance arms. So they're saying unless they get some sort of guarantee or undertaking, they are not going to apply. They've also come out swinging with in justifying the massive pay packet that the CEO Sol Trujillo receives, $13.4 million.
Now the shareholders weren't happy, Jan.
The shareholders were not happy.
Do you want to have a listen?
Yeah,
you have some shareholders.
Well, the share price is still very low, of course. It's gone down enormously from its peak.
It's gone down like everything, but. I'm concerned about the way the company's being run and also what's going to happen about the fibre to the node network.
Remuneration of the directors is absolutely obscene, along with a lot of other companies, but their performance really doesn't justify that sort of money.
Unless we...
There you go.
At the end of trade on Friday last week, I think the Telstra shares closed at $3.98, which is a long way below $7.40.
Absolutely.
Which probably some people in this studio and certainly many people listening would have paid for T2 when the T2 was floated. So despite nearly half the value being wiped off in a couple of years, they're still saying that No Sol's pay packet is justified. And it's, quote, on the back of a strong performance by the economy, according to Mr. Charles Makek, who's the...
McGeckie,
is that how you pronounce it? Sorry, the Telstra Board's Remuneration Committee Chairman.
He was quite adamant about the separation issues, very adamant, in fact, that he's saying that the NBN's not going to be built if they get separated. Here's what he had to say at the AGM.
Unless we can have clarity from the relevant federal government minister that we will not be subjected to further separation, we are not in a position to lodge an RFP bid, nor to build the NBN. Our reasons are quite straightforward. Separation or splitting up of Telstra means, very simply, there would be no business case for Telstra to build an NBN. The economics of it just aren't there. It simply does not add up. And let me say that no separated company has, or in my view, ever will build a fibre network. Telstra cannot build and operate a world-class NBN that provides reliable services to customers if we are separated.
Mm, that was Donald McGeckie, who's the Telstra, the chairman. The person I was talking about before, Andrew, sorry, was Charles Makek, who's the...
very similar.
Similar name. Yeah. So yes, interesting fighting words.
Absolutely.
Yeah, shareholders are not happy. There's also union issues. The union's not happy as well.
And the ACCC.
The ACCC is not happy. They're doing a lot to get a lot of people offside.
Well, Mr. McGeckie once again had the axe out there, swinging away at the ACCC. This is what he had to say about some of the decisions that they'd made recently.
All, and let me say, all of them were anti-investment, anti-innovation, and pro the free riders who want to run off us. If anyone wants to know what is wrong with telecommunications regulation in this country and why it is in urgent need of reform, they need look no further than these atrocious decisions. In a country crying out for infrastructure investment, the regulator has yet again sent a clear message to Telstra's competitors. Don't bother investing. Just continue sponging off Telstra.
Look, them's fighting words. What do you think, boys?
You can see why that would be Telstra's point of view, but of course, when it comes to the monopoly infrastructure, the infrastructure that's a natural monopoly, the cables and infrastructure that's already there running down every street, then I think there's got to be another point of view. It's clearly not going to be Telstra's point of view. They should never have got that stuff into private hands in the first place.
Absolutely. Mr. Conroy, our Minister of B, C, D, E and B, I think it is, yes, he basically came out and called Telstra's bluff on the clarity of the future telecommunications regulator to give the big telco surety before national broadband network bids close on November the 26th. So this time, when we're talking to you on our next show and our final show,
we'll know whether they've put something in at the last minute or not.
Absolutely. So is it bluff? Well, I guess we'll find out in the next little bit, won't we? All right, where to from here with Telstra? They'll sit on the fence for a bit. They'll bluff. They might put in a bid. They might not put in a bid. Terrier, they're the opposition. It's really only two organisations really pitching for the NBN now, isn't there?
Yep.
And the Terrier is falling apart a little bit. Well, it's a bit shaky. I don't know whether I call it falling apart, with a few of the competitors pulling out, some even saying, why do we need the National Broadband Network if we've got ADSL2 working to all the houses? That's a bit unfair for those who live in regional areas, wouldn't you say?
We don't even have ADSL2 to all the houses. We don't even have ADSL to all the houses.
Yep.
No, I don't have ADSL2, and what are we here, about 10 kilometres from the heart of a major city?
There'll be people listening to us that download our...
We do, but only via Telstra, and that's not competition.
There'll be people listening to us that download our 10 megabyte version of the program, or they'll be listening to us saying, oh, if only I had ADSL.
Yeah,
if only
you could actually hear us a bit more clearly.
That's right, if only I could use the internet and access the internet at speeds faster than 56K dial-up, then that'd be fantastic. I'd settle for first generation ADSL. Mm.
And the other funny thing too with Telstra and the Baslink, that's the one. Now that the power company is going to provide broadband across their fibre that they just by chance ran at the same time that they were running their power cables, Telstra are going to compete there in the marketplace. So I don't know. I can't work them out. Do we have to? Anyway, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Dr. Ron across in front of me. Graham Callaghan is here. And Lydia's in the United States. She's in California at some strange hour of the morning at the moment. We're going to take a break and we'll be back with more in a moment.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Have you heard something on Tech Talk Radio worth talking about? Are you looking to share your technical dilemmas or opinions with like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners? Well, now you can. Introducing the Tech Talk Radio web forum. Visit forum.techtalkradio.com.au and join our community. It's free and on a web browser near you. You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
If you listen to Tech Talk Radio live, you've probably wondered why you can't chat with the panellists in real time. Surely such technology exists. Well, now it does. chat.techtalkradio.com.au. By popular demand, you can now chat real time with panellists and other Tech Talk enthusiasts. All you need is a web browser, an internet connection, and a comfy chair. Monday nights at 8 p.m, go to chat.techtalkradio.com.au.
And tonight, right now, we can talk about iiNet a little bit more because...
Not more iiNet.
Very topical. Yeah, more iiNet. Then we're going to talk about the internet filtering stuff.
More iiNet?
More iiNet. Hello, Warlock.
Hi, Warlock. Does that mean it's not like more beer or something? Isn't it? Yeah. Anyway, come and have a visit if you're listening to us live on the stream around Australia.
Warlock's
going to
fall off his chair, I think.
chat.techtalkradio.com.au.
That's us. And there's a record amount of people in there tonight, which is really good. So the more the merrier. We like it. So, yes.
Do you know who I reckon would have an opinion about all this iiNet stuff?
Who?
I reckon Adam might have something to say about it.
Really? What gives you that impression?
I don't know. Just something in the back of my mind says, yeah.
All right. Well, let's roll out.
Adam is going to talk about iiNet.
Let's hear about iiNet.
Australia's copyright police have used the cover of the internet filtering debate to launch a surprise attack on ISPs, with 7 movie houses filing an action against progressive ISP iiNet, claiming it harbours pirates. The action against iiNet was filed in the federal court last week by Village Roadshow, Universal Pictures, Warner Brothers, Paramount Pictures, Sony Pictures Entertainment, 20th Century Fox, and Disney, as well as the 7 Network. The companies want an order forcing iiNet to prevent its customers from engaging in copyright infringement over its network and are expected to claim damages. It's a move that's likely to send a chill through the Australian internet service community, who already have their hands full with the federal government's plans to force them to implement mandatory ISP-level content filtering. iiNet is one of Australia's largest ISPs and no stranger to controversy, with Managing Director Michael Malone recently volunteering to participate in the internet filtering trials just so the ISP can help point out how stupid the idea is. You don't need to be a conspiracy nut to question the timing of this week's legal action, coordinated by the Australian Federation Against Copyright Theft, AFACT. There's an old saying, "My enemy's enemy is my friend." Communications Minister Stephen Conroy is facing an uphill battle to implement his mandatory ISP-level filtering, which critics say is unworkable and heavy-handed censorship which has the potential to be abused. The plan's Conservative supporters in the Senate are already calling for the filtering to be expanded to encompass illegal content, although they won't define what that is at this point. ISPs such as iiNet are leading the fight against this plan. iiNet has also publicly slammed the federal government's efforts to build a national broadband network. Meanwhile, the Australian Federation Against Copyright Theft is facing an uphill battle to stop Australians downloading copyrighted material via peer-to-peer networks such as BitTorrent. AFACT and its supporters want ISPs to monitor their customers' usage and enforce copyright law, a job ISPs say is best left to the police. The head of the Internet Industry Association, Peter Koronis, has been previously quoted as saying ISPs won't step in unless forced to do so by law. With the copyright police and the moral minority in the Senate attacking ISPs on two fronts, It forces ISPs to divide their efforts between two fights. Should Conroy get his internet filtering wish, you can bet AFAC will be first in line, calling for the plan to be expanded to encompass illegal movie downloads. At this point, ISPs will have no choice but to comply, and thus be burdened with the task of censoring what all Australians can see and do online. Expect Australia's ISPs to circle the wagons and plan an orchestrated response to this two-pronged attack, designed to hit ISPs when they're most vulnerable.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
The rollout of this particular filtering system has obviously provided a few other opportunities to, as we've spoken about before, with these movie companies and censorship in general. It's probably not one of the best things to happen to Australian internet, not to mention the speeds and potential ramifications that we've got on that. But I think it's just the censorship in itself. Like, where does it end? Where does it end? Joining us on the telephone now is Colin Jacobs. He is a spokesperson from Electronic Frontiers Australia and one of the contenders in leading the fight against this new filtering system that the government's proposing. Good evening, Colin. Can you tell us a little bit about what it is that the government's trying to achieve with this?
Hi, guys. Well, they went to the election with a cyber safety plan, and the major part of that was this filtering mechanism that would be a mandatory filter to all homes and schools that would make the internet kids safe, basically. Now, what's happened since then, really only in the last month or two, it's come out that there'll also be a mandatory component to that where nobody can opt out. All adults, all internet connections have to be filtered this way. So we're sort of looking at a two-pronged filtering attack, if you will. And the pilot that they're running at the moment that you were referring to before, that's mainly targeting the second one, the compulsory one. So basically they've set themselves two goals.
So we're really turning into the nanny country, really. We've got a big brother watching over our shoulder. And, of course, once this technology becomes, like, switched on, what else are they potentially going to be watching us do?
Well, it's all a bit murky what is actually going to be targeted. A lot of the rhetoric has talked about child pornography and, quote-unquote, illegal material. But there's also been some talk about unwanted material. And The blacklist that the government has right now, it's compiled by a body called the ACMA, which is the media regulator, and their terms of reference include much more than just illegal child pornography. It includes anything that would be X-rated, that would be refused classification, and even R-rated sites that don't have a mechanism to prevent kids looking at them. So we know, for instance, that there are several sites on the current blacklist that are there because of nudity. So how this will scale and what's ultimately to be on the list, there's still a bit of uncertainty around that.
Colin, we all want to know what unwanted content is. I mean, at Tech Talk here, we understand that there is illegal content. There's stuff that we cannot view on television in Australia. There's stuff that we cannot buy in shops. And we understand there's things that we are not allowed to look at on the internet. But this unwanted content, is there a list or is somewhere that we can actually look to see what the government deems as being supposedly unwanted? And who's making this decision?
Well, excellent questions. A lot of the rhetoric, you know, they talk about child pornography and some campaigners will talk about violent porn or bestiality or you know, horrible things that are sort of hard to defend.
And that's fine. A lot of that is legislated as being illegal. That's fine. I understand
that's
that.
That's right. However, the current list that exists, as I said before, it has anything that would even be R-rated and potentially in some circumstances MA-15+, when you're dealing with mobile content. So, do they plan to expand that? We're not sure. I mean, how do you scale that if they want to increase the number of sites on the blacklist? A long way, we don't know. But what we do know is that once the mechanism is in place, there will be pressure to expand the amount of material that is put on there, whether or not, you know, the initial goal is modest or broad. Politicians have already expressed their pet peeves about what should show up on there, whether it's all adult material, gambling sites. One Labor MP is very much upset by anorexia, pro-Anna websites, things like that. So, you know, we know it will expand, and I would expect that the copyright lobby would be very much lining up to take their place at the bargaining table as well.
So even with illegal content, even though we've got this very murky area with questionable content, but even with illegal content, who decides if it's illegal? I mean, at the moment, under the current laws, if you want to stop something from coming in, you've got to charge somebody with doing it. It goes to court, and a court can decide on a strong legal basis whether something is illegal or not. But that's not going to be how this filter will work. Yeah. There won't be a court making the decision, will there?
And you've also got the Office of Film Literature and Classification, which looks after feature films and DVDs and things like that. But who's going to... Like, there's a hell of a lot of sites that need looking at before they get the tick. Is it going to be open and then blocked, or blocked and then open?
Well, there's a couple of points there. One thing to mention is that there's actually reasonably little material that is illegal to view. Child pornography would be one example, but most material that's refused classification by the classification board, formerly the OFLC, that's illegal to sell, and they can vary from state to state, but it's, you know, just possessing it isn't necessarily criminal, but, you know, that would end up, all of that sort of material that's RC would certainly end up on the blacklist. But what one thing that is worrying to us and to many others is that when the classification board you know, refuses classification on a movie, or they rate something R or X, that decision is public and it can be appealed to the Classification Review Board. But when you're talking about internet filtering, everything has to be secret. The blacklist can't be publicised, because then the government would be in the business of publishing a list of child pornography or, you know, unwanted pornography for the world to enjoy, and that's not a business, you know, they really want to be in, I'm sure. So anything that gets on there is going to be completely secret, and that's, you know, really from a free speech point of view, that's a whole different ball game, and a bit more akin to, you know, what goes on in countries that don't enjoy our democratic freedoms. So
joining us on the panel this evening, you're listening to Colin Jacobs from Electronic Frontiers Australia. Colin, what's the time frame for the rollout? Obviously, there's been a few tests, but there seems to be a bit of uncertainty about how soon and when and how this is going to roll out. Have you got any further information on that?
Well, you know, they did a study this year. They compared 6 filtering products, and that was completed in the first half of the year. Now the pilot is on the cards. They want to begin that before Christmas, and that will take some months to complete. So we'd expect at the end of that point, probably first or second quarter next year, NX, the company that the government has contracted to run the pilot, will report, and then the government will decide what to do. And that will probably involve introducing legislation. So whether they're up for a fight in Parliament or you know, exactly what road they want to take, we don't know. There's always hope, even if it's optimistic, that once they see the results of the pilot, which are unlikely to be a resounding endorsement for filtering, that they may see reason and modify the policy a bit, but that's that all remains to be seen. So sometime next year is when it will heat up in terms of legislation and action by the ISTs.
The other question that a lot of our listeners are asking is the obvious way to people like us around this sort of thing is things like proxies and VPNs, which are encrypted, so that the filter wouldn't be able to see the content. Now, the logical extension for that would be for the government to start banning some forms of encryption so that you can't bypass the filter that way. Is that something that concerns you?
It is. I mean, if the government pushes ahead with the most aggressive scheme, you'll find, of course, that straight away those that want to get around it will be able to, with the technologies you mentioned and with others. So then the temptation will be very high to look into some way to ban circumvention technologies, maybe adding certain proxies to the blacklist, or, could they ban VPNs? I mean, probably not, but other countries with technological filtering mechanisms have certainly done that.
Yeah, China, for example, owning technology that can encrypt communication so you can have private conversations is illegal for that reason.
Right, and so, you know, we would be worried that the temptation would be there to try and crack down on the circumvention, because it's going to be the very people that the filtering is targeted against, be it those who trade in illegal material, or, you know, just be it curious teenagers, who will be the most familiar with the circumvention technology and will be the first to use it. So, you know, the very day it's launched, there'll be some kid on the evening news getting around it, making the government look silly, and so, you know, of course we would worry that that trying to prevent that sort of circumvention would, you know, be next on the cards.
I think that was pretty much the case when the filters that you could download from ACMA came out too. I think someone had managed to
discredit it immediately.
Absolutely.
Well, that's just the nature of the internet. I mean, one line that we pursue, especially when we sort of talk to policymakers, is that there, you know, there is a difference between the internet and between books and movies and the other media that we've enjoyed and that are currently under the auspices of the censor. The internet is just, it's not a broadcast medium. There isn't really a single choke point. And so the temptation is there amongst some policymakers to see the ISP as akin to a TV station, when really they're much more analogous to a post office. They don't really look at what's delivering, and you know, things come in from different places and are assembled, you know, finally on your computer. So the old tools of censorship really don't apply, and because of that, no matter what mechanism they eventually pursue, it will be immediately circumvented. And that's been the consistent message from the ISPs as well.
Colin, what can people do if they don't like the sounds of this? Obviously, there's your website, which you can tell us about, but what can the average person do? They ring their MP or something?
We certainly, now is a good time to put pressure on parliamentarians. If you've got a Labor MP, then they need to know that they're pursuing a very unworkable and unpopular policy. And the more MPs, even backbenchers, who are aware of this, then the tougher fight the minister will have when he's trying to push legislation through and debating the matter in cabinet. Any parliamentarian should be made aware of the opposition to this, because again, if it comes to parliament, if it comes to legislation, we would certainly hope that the coalition and the Greens at least would oppose any push for this. So have a look at nocleanfeed.com. That's our EFA's campaign website for this. It has some information about what's going on and some suggestions on what you might want to say when you contact your representative.
That's www.nocleanfeed.com, is that right?
That's right.
I find it quite ironic, I guess, that the people that we're trying to protect, the kids, are those that are going to be able to get around it in a lot of respects. And as a result, you've got to look at the futility of this event really from day one. And it seems to me to be political grandstanding of an electoral sort of stage back in 2007 when we had the last election. Would you agree with that?
Well, I mean, the Rudd government have been very keen to be seen, at least, to fulfil all of their campaign promises, and that's a laudable goal in some ways. But I think they've painted themselves into a little bit of a corner. The policy of filtering the internet, I mean, this isn't the first time it's come up. The coalition looked into this, for example, in 1999, and what we ended up with was something that's the current regime that's in place, where ACMA is compiling this blacklist. But it was realised then that mandatory filtering just isn't technically feasible, and it's still the case today, despite what the government might say about improvements in the technology. So by pursuing a policy that's failed once, or at least once in the past, they've certainly got their work cut out for them, and it's a bit hard to understand why they would pursue it with such zeal, given their other objectives about making internet access faster and more affordable for Australians.
I guess the danger, Colin, is that for most people, for the masses, it's just all going to be too hard and completely... it's not going to understand the issues that are at stake. And I think it's sort of incumbent on the likes of, you know, us and yourself and everybody listening to try and educate as many people as we possibly can. Because I can see that, a little bit down the track, people are going to say, oh, yeah, that issue about, you know, banning the internet or, you know, censoring the internet, oh, you know, if it's good for our kids and stuff, then, yeah, why not? You know, who cares? And it'll just, you know, there'll be a... There'll just be I can see a wave of apathy in the general populace, and it's the sort of thing that's likely to get through by stealth in that regard, and everybody is going to suffer, whether it's directly or indirectly. It's something that we just need to educate as many people about as we possibly can.
Well, you're right on the money there. It's a challenge we face every day. I mean, if you do a poll and you ask people, do you want to stop teenagers looking at hardcore pornography? Shouldn't we do everything we can to do that? Well, people are going to say yes, because it sounds great when you put it that way. But if you ask people, on the other hand, do you think the government should have a secret blacklist that nobody knows the contents of, that they can prevent what you see on the internet, people are going to say no. So somewhere, you know, in between those two characterizations of the scheme lies the real truth that people need to be made aware of. And the fact that the former goal is not technologically achievable should give the second argument there a little bit more weight, but as you say, it can be a reasonably subtle argument to get out to the public, and so that's what we're trying to do as an organisation, and That's what your listeners should be doing to their friends and family as well.
Absolutely. We'll point people at your website, www.nocleanfeed.com.
Colin, thank you very much for spending the time this evening and putting forward your point of view. I think everybody in the panel and here, obviously we're very much against the censorship type of thing because, after all, it's a personal thing and it starts at home on the computers in the living rooms as opposed to what the government thinks everyone should and shouldn't have. So thank you very much for your time this evening.
You're very welcome, guys.
Thanks, Colin. All right, you've been listening to Colin...
Colin Jacobs.
Jacobs from Electronic Frontiers Australia. And the website, again, was cleanfeed.com.
Yep.
Making some very valid points.
Definitely.
Very valid points. All right. Yes, we got till, what, next year before that sort of all sort of comes into being after they do these next tests. Then you got the big guys to tame, the Telstras of this world. That'll be no mean feat, I would imagine. They'll probably be too busy... I know. Well, they may not have the fibre to the node network to build the NBN. You never know. We'll find out next week. Oh, so much is going to happen, isn't it? Now,
absolutely.
Let's talk a little bit about piracy because we were going to do that. We'll have a listen to an interview I did earlier this week with Vanessa from Microsoft in respect to what they're up to. One of the other interesting things which has made news this week in the United States, a big counterfeiting hardware bust. Authorities in the US seized a massive collection of counterfeit IT equipment, 420,000 pieces of networking equipment and hardware components. Now, that's a big operation, churning out counterfeiting
and
software. Yeah.
I think you actually put a little graphic in the Tech Talk newsletter this week, Andrew, and it had two CDs or DVDs side by side. And I had like the one on the left was a genuine DVD, and the one on the right was a pirated DVD. Just having a very quick look at that image, the only difference I could see between the two was that the pirated one was slightly off-center the way it was labeled. And if you looked at the center of the DVD, it wasn't quite. It looked like it had been labeled with a paper adhesive label. It wasn't quite stuck on.
It didn't quite
100%.
Glow as much.
No,
did it?
That's right. But otherwise, if you gave it a very quick look, you'd think, "Yeah, that was a genuine disc."
Well, exactly. If you didn't have anything to compare it with, not to mention the boxes that these things come in, because people, that looks like the real thing. I'll buy that, and it's at a really cheap price. But cheap is not always the best in a lot of respects.
Exactly.
Not even in software, but in, say, fencing. You know, you wouldn't get the cheapest contract to come around and try and sell you a fence because, you know, the nails won't be, you know, gal, and, you know, they'll space the timber a little bit too far apart to make things stretch. And, you know, just, you know, 2 or 3 years down the track, you're upset about it. And it's the same with software. You put in your machine, it doesn't quite work.
That's it.
BSA, the Business Software Alliance, did a survey recently in piracy reduction impact study, to be precise, the economic benefits of a 10-point reduction in software piracy from 2008 to 2011. Some of the interesting statistics to come out of this was actually the areas of, well, they broke the world down into certain geographical areas that we're all probably fairly familiar with. In the Asia Pacific, which is our region, the biggest piracy sort of, or should I say, percentage of piracy rate was Vietnam with 88%, but our nearest neighbours, Indonesia, came in at 85% of piracy software.
So does that mean that all software in use in those countries, of all the software in use, 85% is pirated?
That's the way I'm interpreting this particular document that we have here, yes.
They just don't care, do they?
No respect for intellectual property, which is what it's all about. You know, a lot of people spend time and effort and trying to put these things together, and then you get that sort of result. In Western Europe, Italy was the biggest, 51% was their piracy rate. In Latin America, Argentina at 75%. In the Middle East, Pakistan, 86%.
86, that's a good effort.
Yeah, so, and then in Central and Eastern Europe, the Russians and the Ukrainians were doing pretty good, 80 and 84% respectively there for their pirated sort of technology.
And what was the rate in Australia, did you say?
The rate in Australia, I didn't say, did I? 29%.
29%.
In Asia Pacific, we're well down the rungs. There's only one...
So we're relatively compliant
only compared
to their neighbours.
Only Japan is less than us at 25%, but that's big bickies when it comes to... You know, loss of income for people, small businesses selling technology, selling software that, you know, they're trying to make a quid out of and make their living out of. So, yeah. Anyway, as I said, I caught up with Vanessa Hutley during the course of this week. And she...
From Microsoft.
From Microsoft, yeah. And she is the Director of Intellectual Property.
And she'd have a thing or two to say about this, I would imagine.
Funny about that. Anyway, here's Vanessa and when I had a chat to her this week. Piracy affects not only developers of and producers of software, it also has an effect on the bottom line of businesses who sell legitimate software. How does piracy affect an economy such as Australia's?
Piracy affects every aspect of the chain of distribution and the Australian economy. For example, Andrew, we have a very, very vibrant and supportive eco-business in our partners. They are the people who sell computer parts, they sell software services. These are local Australian businesses. They're competing against people who don't invest in service with their customers. That disproportionate playing field completely jeopardises their business model. So the importance about fighting piracy is to support those Australian businesses who are in turn supporting other small businesses when they deploy their software. If you get pirated software from someone, they just want to take your money and they've run. Those small businesses are there for the long term to help you. What about the startup developers? When you're in an environment where intellectual property isn't respected, it's very hard for those people with those great new ideas for software or games to get startup funding. So the future great developers are also having a lot of difficulty and piracy affects them.
So how does an organisation such as Microsoft help those developers and help those people that are upstarters and trying to get a foot in the industry?
Well, we believe that this is all about creating an awareness of the importance of intellectual property. Once you have a vibrant intellectual property ecosystem, you are then fostering a genuine respect for innovation. So one of the important roles of our anti-piracy program is to stand up and talk about the importance of intellectual property, to educate people about what it brings to the economy and how having a great, you know, new startup developers will mean that Australia is developing in the digital age right up there with every other advanced, you know, economy and nation. It also means that that means you're getting people who are skilled in this workforce. So we believe that that's part of our educative role and our role to discuss the policy issues. But also at the coalface, we stand up and we take cases against people who are selling pirated software so that the small businesses who are trying to compete against those people who are rip-off artists don't have to keep competing against them. We also do a huge amount of consumer awareness because at the end of the day, Andrew, the person who really gets ripped off is the small business owner or, you know, the parent who's trying to get the software in the hands of their kids so that they can, you know, do their homework. We're trying to get to stop this happening to consumers as well.
So, Vanessa, this obviously is a global approach because obviously software can come in from anywhere these days, either on a, as a physical means on a disk or in a box or electronically via a download somewhere. Obviously, your efforts are obviously global. So how does that work? Are you targeting any specific countries or regions or areas or are you more active in certain markets than you are in others?
We are active around the world. Recently, we announced the Worldwide Anti-Piracy Day. The announcement of that event was to actually drive awareness of the global nature of this issue. The Business Software Alliance piracy survey, the most recent one, estimates that the piracy losses around the world are $50 billion US dollars, and that's just for business application software. So we actually work around the globe. We have a worldwide investigative team, but also we work across industries. We collaborate with the film and the television industries because this is about a threat to all forms of innovation. Microsoft, of course, is affected, but we also want people to understand that this is a global problem and we're all part of the solution. Every time somebody makes the choice to buy a counterfeit piece of software or of music or a game, they are condoning that practice, asking yourself some basic questions about why is this so cheap and what will this mean for the developers, you know, is a beginning to the solution.
Some of the software these days is the genuine boxing that it seems to come in and the CDs and holograms that like Microsoft use on their packaging. Obviously, these guys, these pirate guys are actually replicating that. So how can a consumer, what are the tricks or the tips that consumers can apply to actually make sure that they are getting what they are paying for?
You're absolutely right, Andrew. But the real issue is they invest on what looks good on the outside. They don't invest on the really important part, which is how the software will work. So in order to avoid throwing your good money after bad and getting something that might have malware on it or not have the complete code, we ask consumers to do what they do when they're handing over their good money to buy any other, you know, important product for their lives. Does the person on the internet or, you know, however you're buying it, have a policy by which you can contact them if you're not happy with the product? What is their return policy? What are their terms of sale? You know, are they very open in giving you all the contact details? Go to a website to compare what they're offering you from, you know, to what it's supposed to look like. The Microsoft site, microsoft.com.au/genuine, has a whole interactive walkthrough on what you should look for to get, you know, the genuine product. Don't hand over your money until you've got the product in your hands and you've been assured you've got genuine product. We're also finding this trend that people are ordering this over the internet and it's being delivered directly out of China, for example. And so it comes through customs and people get it. We're getting increased customer complaints. They put this software in, some of it doesn't even load. It actually hasn't got any code on it. So, you know, we are as concerned because when a consumer has that sort of experience with what they think is genuine Microsoft software, that affects us as well. They'll ring up and be very angry on our licensing and helplines. We have to sort of tell them the bad news that they've actually been duped. They probably won't get their money back, and we have to try and help them to at least track down the person who did that to them.
Let's talk a little bit about the online delivery methods these days. Obviously, you've mentioned eBay as one, and I see you've announced recently some efforts in the Federal Magistrates Court dealing with a lot of online traders, predominantly dealing through eBay. You mentioned contacts, returns, and point of sale, just all the credibility. eBay traditionally offers a level of contact just because it's through eBay. They're using the brand name eBay to buy online, and traditionally some of these guys might be power sellers, and they just put one dodgy product in their mix or something like that. How does a consumer, obviously, at that stage where they say, oh, I want to buy an office product through eBay, well, they get one of those emails, and let me tell you how many of those you get on a weekly basis. I must admit I haven't been getting many of them lately because my spam filter is working very well, but the cheap manufactured discs, you know, $42, why pay more? You know, you just look at them and you go, nah, they're not real. These guys are still out there, so obviously, you don't respond to emails, that's one tip, but the eBay stuff I would have thought may be a little bit of a trick and also a trap for consumers.
eBay and all of the auction sites are fantastic ways for people to conduct business in the new online world. And, you know, and what we want to do is improve people's experience of that transaction. That's why we ask people to be, you know, canny with their money. Don't hand over your hard-earned money to somebody who isn't really being upfront with you. You know, it's very easy when you're dealing with a genuine reseller as someone who is, as you say, a power seller, when they're really open and they have a, you know, professional website where they can have return policies, they give you warranties. The people who you referred to, you know, that we took action against, they were moving significant amounts of counterfeit product, but they were very cagey in the way they were doing it, you know, and so I think we don't want people to be ripped off. As I said, it affects us as much as it affects them. But we ask people to sit back sometimes and say, that is an unreasonably low price. Why would it be so low? Because, you know, intellectual property and, you know, the benefits that software bring, that takes a lot of research and development. There are reasons why there are, you know, certain things cost certain amounts. Just questioning the level of the pricing is a really good start to not be handing over your good money. And the thing is, you might think you're making a saving, but when that doesn't load, when that software doesn't load, or, you know, you find that your family photographs just absolutely disappeared because the system crashed and the malware or the Trojan just absolutely, you know, destroyed your system, or, you know, your bank details got leaked, that what appeared to be a good $50, you know, buy is actually not. You just wasted and lost an awful lot of money and an awful lot of memories and an awful lot of security.
Let's talk a little bit about the physical side of things. Microsoft have been training customs officers and law enforcement agencies to detect counterfeit software. Obviously, this is a tactic designed at the coalface, I guess at airports for people bringing things in, or maybe for agents when they go around to dodgy backyard chemical labs, for want of a better term, where people are burning things left, right and centre on DVD burners. Is that proving fruitful in clamping down on some of these counterfeit guys?
It's extremely important. Because as you rightly said, Andrew, we'll never be able to sue every person who's involved in this. And we need to be clear, the people who are involved in this are not innocently, you know, selling just one copy of counterfeit. This is a very profitable, organised business. And so having the police and customs being aware of that and stepping up and helping all copyright owners, not just Microsoft, is an incredibly important thing and is actually making a difference, I believe.
So how do you locate these offending suppliers? Do you really rely on, I guess, two forms of information, one from law enforcement, people who may stumble across or be aware of a syndicate doing something like this, and consumers? Is that really the way you find out about it?
We undertake our own investigations. Clearly, you know, what we're talking about isn't something that somebody tells us something and then we just run off and raid someone. We have to make our own investigations to assure ourselves that that information is correct and to secure the evidence so that we can be very, very, very clear when we take a case against someone. We're not in the business of, you know, randomly and picking people to sort of, you know, bring a case. So we work very closely to make sure that our investigations are clear. We receive information from the community. And that is as broad a statement as the types of information we get. We will have consumers ring us up. We have a hotline where people who are, you know, really quite desperate, they've spent a lot of money and they have nothing. The person's packed up shop and run away. And they are, you know, angry. And they leave us information about that person. We, you know, do training. We find information from the cases that we've done previously. Who are these people, you know, obtaining their product from internationally? It's as wide and as broad as that, Andrew. It's every person who's ever been hurt by piracy usually will come and tell us.
So how extensive is it, Vanessa? Like, as a percentage of PCs around the world, how many of them would harbour non-genuine software? And breaking that down a little bit further, let's break it into operating systems and applications. What sort of level of PC infiltration of pirated software are we talking about here? Are we talking 50%, 30%, 80%?
It varies around the world. The average, we don't have a distinction through the Business Software Alliance between an operating system and an application, because the Business Software Alliance members are both owners of operating systems and also developers of application. But their estimate, and they've been doing this for over 10 years, and so their statistics are quite strong, they estimate that 1 in 3 PCs is using illegal software.
So it's 30% have got some form of illegal software on them.
On an average, on a worldwide average. Now, obviously, there are places where that is higher. And, Andrew, also, there are pockets of industry where that is higher. One of the things that is most, you know, disturbing is some of the creators themselves of intellectual property, we find, have high levels of use of counterfeit software.
Really?
We've, you know, publishing sometimes, you know, online publishers, that's a disturbing trend which we have been finding and the Business Software Alliance has been finding. And that in itself is a little disappointing for us, because what we want is, you know, people to respect intellectual property across all fields.
Did they give any indication as to why they were using counterfeit software?
People will rationalise very often for their use of anything that, you know, they haven't paid for. So, you know, the excuses are multiple and varied. Sometimes it is also inadvertent, you know, that businesses have grown rapidly and they haven't had good software asset management practices. And that's another thing that we advocate. If companies get into, you know, problems by using illegal software inadvertently, there are good steps that they can take to really actually address that and find the best way to deploy their software and to sell and to use their money. Because sometimes people will buy stuff they don't even need because they're not planning for their application and software purchases in a systematic way and haven't got a very, very good inventory of what they even hold on their systems. And that can lead to inadvertent, unlicensed use.
Just looking to the future a little bit, Vanessa, we're starting to see cloud computing starting to become... it's moving into the mainstream, let's just put it that way, with what a lot of companies are offering, be it Microsoft or any other one for that matter. As everyone starts moving into the cloud environment where you'll be able to use a word processor or a spreadsheet online, obviously there's going to be less need for people to want to get out there and get pirated software, I guess, because they can do it all online.
Yes. When there's no physical product to be moved around, and people can, you know, either, you know, apply for services or get services in a variety of ways. Yes, that for that group of people and those consumers and that dynamic of business will be, I think, a fantastic thing because piracy will be reduced.
What strategies are being put in place now to reduce piracy? Will it reduce from the levels that we're currently seeing?
I believe it will because I think as people start to create their own material more and more online and the empowering nature of what is happening in the digital world, people become more proximate to the power and the excitement of what intellectual property is. The more people have an appreciation of the tangible nature of it, of this intangible thing, which is ironic, but I think people then gain respect for it and then they won't do it. And if they do it, they do it deliberately. So I think a whole aspect of piracy, which is the inadvertent or the person who just doesn't think it has any really bad side to it, will change. It won't change tomorrow, but I've seen a huge change in the 10 years that I've been working in this business and doing this work. There's an increased awareness both within governments, within other industries, within the education sector, of what a powerful thing software and the games industry and the future of all of these industries that we can't even imagine have for, you know, future generations. I've been really happy, and it's made me feel, you know, hopeful that that's going to change, and I am very hopeful. Even in the last 18 months, the type of physical piracy that we saw as a big problem 18 months ago, when we went back to do a review, we didn't find the same level of small PC sellers who were going to prepared to hard disk load our software and therefore sell it illegally. The education that we did around the enforcement we did and also our awareness raising, it's all part of, you know, a continuous discussion, Andrew. So we have three pillars. We have the technology. We try and make it more difficult for people to counterfeit. But we also have education, and I think that's the key. And the enforcement is there to drive awareness of the consequences and to try and absolutely make it easier for those who are doing the right thing to sell genuine software. So I think the combination of those three things will lead to a reduction. But it takes a lot of effort, and it takes a continuous combined effort from consumers to the distribution channel to the software owners, you know, ourselves.
Vanessa, it's been very interesting talking to you about these issues today because I think it affects us all in one way or another. So thanks for spending the time talking to us on Tech Talk Radio today.
It's been a pleasure, Andrew. Thank you.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Compelling.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
Judicious.
The question is really whether young people particularly are addicted to being connected to other people all the time.
Historical.
Today is a very important day in Australia's history. This is the day, the 6th of October, 2006, that life in Australia will be changed forever.
Caring.
I know as a parent, I would often say to my children, you've just spoken to this person for 8 hours at school, how can you sit online and chat to them for another 5 hours?
You heard of road rage? What about web rage?
They should be wearing a mask and carrying a gun.
Relations between Telstra and the federal government have been extremely strained almost from the moment Sol Trujillo became chief executive.
Optus had quite a good quarter, but its 3G service is very low profile at the moment.
And the Queen's got an iPod.
Eddie's got one.
Yeah.
I wonder what she listens to. She'll probably listen to us.
An unexpectedly high number of votes
which has swamped the system. Well, what did they expect?
Controversial.
Less attention is paid to the equally interesting question, should journalists blog?
Magical.
And I've got some residual powers.
Ambitious.
High-speed broadband, it's available in most of Asia as well as being in the rest of the world. Let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
Religion.
Talking of the Roman Catholics, I have been on Vatican Radio.
Comedy.
You put the date on ePray, and you get a whole service just on it.
How does it go?
It goes.
Insightful, entertaining, and informative. Tech Talk Radio. More than just technology.
It's a strictly rehearsed and finely polished program.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
And welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb, Dr. Ron, Graham Callaghan, Lydia Davis. Let me push up the fader there. Hi, Lyd, if you're still there with us, I'm sure you are.
Howdy, howdy.
How's things in California at the moment? Cold, wet, miserable, or is it nice and sunny?
Surprisingly warm during the days, to the point of, you know, short sleeves and shorts for most people during the day. The afternoon gets cool, but...
It's a great thing about winter in San Francisco, really, isn't it? Well, not winter. You're coming into winter. Anyway.
She's in fall.
She is. Fall. That's
she's
right.
In free fall.
Hey, we haven't got long to go tonight before we do the webs, all that stuff at the end of the show. Just a couple of interesting things that have popped up in the meanwhile. Global broadband users reach 400 million. That's not a bad effort. Everyone considered. Some of them won't be censored. Some of them will. An analysis of the global broadband market has found that the total number of subscribers has reached 400 million. And that's from an analyst firm called Point Topic. Do you reckon there's that many out there?
How many?
400 million. I would have thought it would be more than that, but 400 million sounds reasonable, I suppose. A lot of places which don't have it. In other interesting news, Apple gets a big win in the clone case. Remember how they had to go at Pi-Star over their little Apple clones?
Yeah.
Apple has moved closer to victory in its case against Mac clone vendor Pi-Star, where a US judge last Tuesday threw out an antitrust claims lobbied by the company against Apple. The claim argued that the Mac OS computer market was separate from the PC arena, and as such, Apple was maintaining an illegal monopoly control over the market by refusing to allow other vendors to sell computers preloaded with OS X.
And illegal monopoly control.
No wonder they threw that one out, really. Goodness me. Have you heard anything about that in the news, Lyd, over there? The Pi-Star stuff and Apple being in Silicon Valley. No?
I don't like Apple. I don't listen to it.
Okay, good.
I don't listen to news about it. I'm sorry.
Fair enough. Everyone's entitled to that. But yes, so nothing, yeah. The domain name market. Domain market wants Aussie registrars. Don't know why. But apparently Sudo has made a whirlwind visit. They're obviously an American company, to visit Australia to drum up some relationships with local domain name registrars. They're obviously trying to sell Australian domain names on the overseas market. You can buy them locally here. Why can't you log on locally and buy them locally is what I'd want to say.
We buy .coms here. We buy .orgs and .nets and things which aren't exclusively Australian. So I suppose it would make sense that people who had an interest in...
What's the most exotic domain name that you've bought, as in country-wise?
I would say the most exotic would be a Polish domain, Andrew.
Polish?
Yeah, and that's .pl. And I'll set that up for a customer here. You're looking at me very strangely, Graham. Why?
That was unexpected. I didn't know that.
The person that I set it up for is actually an expat, and he's living in Poland, and he runs a golfing...
And where did you buy that, or how did you buy that?
Well, I had to go to a... Excuse me, I had to go to a registrar that supported the .pl namespace.
Are there many of those around, or did you have to dig for a while, or what?
I had to dig for a little bit, I think, but I got one okay, and I was able to host it here without any problems, and I was able to delegate the traffic from to that registrar through to my servers. That worked okay. It worked quite quickly.
Oh, very good.
Yes.
So successful.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, that's fairly exotic. The other one's the .mobi namespace, which people are starting to actually... to use now in Australia, which is good. We've had the ttr.mobi for a while.
We have.
Which I think was registered with a European registrar.
Yeah, can we get them locally now? I think some of the Australian registrars carry them.
Because when we first looked at it, the Australian registrars didn't carry them. So you just have to shop around.
Okay, Internet Explorer 8 is getting closer and closer to release, with Microsoft announcing that the end of first half of 2009... Watch out, web developers. I count myself amongst that. That'll be the end of our life as we know it, as we have a new browser that comes out. And fortunately, unfortunately, whatever the case might happen to be, Microsoft do happen to have the majority share of web browsers by default.
I've got the beta version of IE8 installed on one of my machines.
I haven't been there for a while with beta versions. Is it working?
Yeah, you had a bad experience with the beta version.
The Apple version of, what do they call it? Safari. On the PC. Dr. Ron remembers that. It loaded up beautifully, but no text. Go figure.
Lots of little icons and graphics on your screen. No text.
There's a few interesting new features in IE8 we'll probably talk about as the release gets closer. So
something to talk about in Tech Talk Radio 2009,
definitely,
I guess.
Definitely, yeah.
Google may pre-install a Chrome browser because no one's taking up on the Chrome. Everyone had a look at it because it was a novelty. Oh, look, Google's come out with a browser. And anyway, apparently Google's investigating deals with major original equipment manufacturers, or OEMs, to get its Chrome browser pre-installed on new computers.
Okay.
Chrome has failed to find much support from either business or individual since its launch in September. However, the search giant is committed to the browser, and pre-installed deals with OEMs would be a logical way to increase the uptake.
It means
it's foisted upon you, as you would say.
I quite like Chrome.
It gives you the option. I like it too. There's some really nice plugins.
Very nice, clean. Oh, there's plugins for it now, are there?
No. There were some nice plugins. You know how Chrome has the like icons on the front screen where you've been recently?
Oh, okay, yeah, yeah.
There's a new one coming out for Firefox which does exactly that now.
Oh, okay,
that's the joys of open source,
absolutely,
really, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, dear.
But the thing that you have to understand with Chrome as it is at the moment is that you're seeing an engine, you're seeing a work in progress there that Google is actually constructing. It's a very basic user interface to a lot of clever stuff behind the scenes.
But I think that's intentional. That's not because it's incomplete. I think that's an intentional design feature of it, that it's a fairly bare interface.
Just designed to be Spartan.
Yeah. Have a look at Google's homepage and you'll see the same approach.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
It means it's fast regardless of how you connect.
That's right. So, yeah, no, it's... And there's those user interface features that I really like and the way the tabs behave. But there's also some behind-the-scenes features that are really good in the way that the thing actually operates and separates processes out from each other to avoid some of the problems that we talked about before with other browsers.
Very good. All right, in other news, Nokia to add IBM's Lotus Notes email to smartphones.
Now,
this is a bad thing, isn't it?
Nokia to add IBM's Lotus Notes email. Oh, why? Yeah. Why?
I think that's all that needs to be said, isn't
dear.
It?
There's some people in the studio who are heavily anti-Notes for obscure reasons because they used a way out-of-date version of it about 100 years ago. It was out of date then when they used it.
It's the bane of my life. We send email marketing newsletters and anyone who's got Lotus Notes can't see it.
And Graeme wasn't talking about you either. But
no, exactly. It doesn't work that way, Graeme. It's a spam law. And the other thing I was going to say is Asus claims the world's fastest smartphone. The new P565 business smartphone, fastest. It has a 800 meg processor and runs Windows Mobile 6.1 and claims to have beaten all other phones in speed testing using the VS Benchmark testing suite. However, this power comes at a price. The phone can only handle 3 hours of 3G talk time. So that wouldn't suit my wife. I can't believe
that. Wouldn't suit you either. You go through mobile phone batteries, don't you?
Oh, yeah, not as much as she does. We're, 3 days into our new cap anniversary. She's used half of it already.
Oh, no.
You work that out.
Oh, that's bad.
That's a pretty good effort. That's like 90 minutes of talk time in 2 days.
Absolutely. I said, go easy. You'll be over your limit by the end of the week.
Yikes. She'll be irradiating her brain with the phone pushed to her head for that.
Absolutely.
Length of time.
All right. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, website gadget, odd spot of the week, just after this.
You're listening.
Dr. Ron?
Here I am listening.
Residual
powers.
And I've got some residual powers.
You can't turn off CDMA.
In terms of the volume,
motorists have to give fingerprints. Now, this
we may have digressed.
Talk radio.
Phil Burgess also claimed the country would remain behind.
We used to think 600 kilometers per second was good
that you're not expecting, even if they do it.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Research in motion make a little device called the BlackBerry. Have you heard of that?
I have.
The BlackBerry Bold 9000 is the Tech Talk Radio Gadget of the Week. T3 magazine describes it as rewriting the smartphone rulebook. With a new iPhone challenging look, a modern interface.
I've seen it. It's very sexy.
Board. Yeah, from BlackBerry's of old. The Bold is a pleasure to use, apparently. Extra processing power means you can flick through the various applications in lightning quick time. Internally, the GPS has better map rendering than most of its handheld rivals. It has an
it's got a built-in GPS.
It does.
Fantastic.
It's got an outstanding high-res screen, apparently. Super fast HSDPA, which in T3's tests regularly eclipsed the iPhone 3G's loading times. It's good to know.
Oh, well, that's good.
It's got stereo speakers with a 3.5mm audio jack. It's got 1GB of memory with a microSD slot, 2MP camera, Wi-Fi, QWERTY keyboard, big display, lots of talk time. $999 is the RRP. Simply Mobile's online are flogging them now for unlocked for about $895, so shop around.
Fantastic.
That's our gadget of the week, the BlackBerry Bold 9000.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
We may have already given this away. au.youtube.com/MontyPython.
We did. That's a great website. Everything, if you're a Python fan.
Sorry, Lid.
She is there. She'll be.
That's right.
Yeah, good, thank you. But yeah, if you're a Monty Python fan, it would have to be probably one of the, newest and best websites around. What is it again, Dr. Ron, for those who missed it earlier on in the show?
It is, ask me again now.
What is it, Dr. Ron?
It's youtube.com/MontyPython.
au.youtube.
Thank you.
That'll work.
.com.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Showtime. Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
A woman who met her husband on the internet has divorced him for cheating on her in virtual reality. Amy Taylor and David Pollard married after meeting and falling in love on an internet chat room. The couple were both fans of Second Life, a game in which players create new identities for themselves in a computer-generated world using 3D animated characters known as avatars. Users can move around and interact with others. The couple were so devoted to the game that they married at a registry office in July 2005.
Just well it wasn't Warcraft.
They had a virtual wedding in Second Life, but one day Ms. Taylor found Mr. Pollard at the computer watching his avatar having sex with a prostitute in Second Life. Then they've split up, gone their separate ways. She claims he was having cyber sex. Oh, it's just really dumb. I'm going to post that on the forum.
Absolutely. Thank you. You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron, Graham Callaghan, Andrew McComb, and our very special guest coming to us live from Silicon Valley on the other side of the world. Thank you for staying up very late in California, Lid.
You're welcome.
Oh, that's good. We'll talk next week for our last show.
Last show of 2008.
We've made it to the end of 2008. Yay. So come back and visit us all then with a big surprise, television-wise. For those of you who've been watching tonight, you've had a sneak preview. It'll only go downhill from here, everybody. All right, until next week, it's bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panelists Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8pm from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations that take the show, including 3WBC and 3XX in Melbourne, Cairns FM, Switch 1197 in Brisbane, 95.3 Huon FM in Tasmania, Queer FM in WA, and Stop and Go Radio in the United States. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.